This message comes from NPR sponsor, Discover. Tired of not getting a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Hey, y'all. This is Sam's Aunt Betty. This week on the show, editor of the Nevada Independent, John Ralston, and national correspondent for NPR, Layla Fadel. All right, let's start the show.
Hey, y'all, from NPR, I'm Sam Sanders. It's been a minute. Here today with two great guests, Layla Fadel, national correspondent for NPR, based in Las Vegas, covering culture, diversity, and race, and John Ralston, editor of the Nevada Independent, covering all the ins and outs of this state's politics. I'm glad you both are here, and I'm glad to be taping this show for the first time ever in one of my favorite cities of all time, Las Vegas.
You know what? I'm so happy to hear this song, Sam, because first of all, it reminds me of my youth, and secondly, it reminds me of Guardians of the Galaxy. How can you not hear this song now and think of that scene in Guardians of the Galaxy, right?
You are reading my mind because I'm playing this song this week because I saw a really crazy story this week that said that cassette sales went up 23% last year in 2018. Cassettes.
But like, who has the equipment?
Guardians of the Galaxy fans.
Wow.
So if you recall, the movie, Chris Pratt's character walks around the whole time old school jams like this on his cassette player. The marketing gurus behind this movie said, we should sell actual cassettes of this music. They did. It boosted actual cassette tape sales by thousands of units last year.
I don't understand that either. I can't even believe there's that many cassette recorders still around.
We need to check the sale of the cassette recorders going with the cassettes.
Exactly.
To figure out who's playing
what. Actually, with maybe really old cars still have the cassette deck in there.
So they go into their car to sit there and listen to the Guardians soundtrack. So it's really, really crazy. And besides the Guardians soundtrack that we're playing now, this song, of course, you all know, is Hooked on a Feeling by Blue Swede. Besides that, the other top-selling tapes of 2018, 21 Pilots, because why not? Britney Spears' first album, Baby One More Time, and the soundtrack to Netflix's Stranger Things.
That is so random.
Right?
The soundtrack to Stranger Things is a great soundtrack, though. That's another throwback.
It's very
track.
80s. Yeah, it's throwback. Yeah. I mean,
but wasn't it CD time when Britney started?
Right.
I feel like it was.
Yeah. What's the last cassette you guys can recall actually having?
I feel like I was always on CDs. I'm not sure.
Oh. I'm
old enough where I should have had cassettes, right?
Yeah. Well, I have you both here in this Nevada week, which I'm so excited about. But I want us to talk about not just Las Vegas, but the news of the entire week. I've asked both of you to describe your week of news in only three words. I know that you both are up to the challenge. I'm going to let you go first, John.
My three words are Harry Reid unplugged, Sam.
Yeah, he's been on a tear recently. You talked with him recently. The New York Times talked with him recently, and he's letting it all hang out. This is the former Senate, majority or minority leader?
Both. He had both positions.
From Nevada.
Right.
Retired now, and he is battling cancer and in a moment where he's just telling people stuff.
Yeah, you know, Harry Reid, as I've said many times in my career, and he's been one of the most fascinating guys to cover, really doesn't have what most politicians have, which is a self-editing mechanism. It's always either been there or been faulty or just not there at all. And of course, you mentioned in the New York Times interview, he told Mark Leibovich that Donald Trump is amoral and that he's the worst president we've ever had. And one of the things I think is funny, I mean, Harry Reid said a lot of things. He talked about essentially what a lot of people would consider an abuse of power, calling bankers to threaten them, calling hedge funds to threaten them because they were going to build coal plants here. Line crossing that Harry Reid says is not line crossing because he was just doing his job for his constituents. But he said a lot of things in a very lengthy interview. I sat with him for about
an hour and a half.
Yeah, it was worth writing up two parts of it. And he is some kind of character.
Well, and this is the thing I kept thinking while reading your stories on him with these interviews. You know, Harry Reid was not afraid to make a deal that might make him look bad in the moment to get his long-term goal down the road. Mm-hmm. And this is for both of you. But, like, when I look at the shutdown right now and Trump's mental calculus with it, he seems to be only concerned with the right now.
He wants to be seen in the most favorable light possible every second, which is kind of an exaggeration of the narcissism that every elected official to some extent has, right? But the point that you make is very insightful about Harry Reid. Is that he never minded making a deal that maybe the public or pundits would not think is great. He didn't care what people said about him. Despite what Donald Trump says about the news media, it's obvious he cares deeply about how he is written about and how he is talked about and how he is perceived. Harry Reid never cared about that. And to some extent, you can say the same thing about Mitch McConnell.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. You know, and there are some specific things that Harry Reid has done that lead and have led to some of the things that liberals right now hate to see the GOP doing. We forget that Harry Reid was responsible for the so-called nuclear option, which made it so that federal nominees for judgeships and other appointments could advance in the Senate by a simple majority vote. Mm-hmm. And like, I don't know, should Democrats look at him a little more harshly in hindsight?
I think some do.
Okay.
And I asked Harry Reid about that in a series of questions when I talked. I mean, he is not only having not having second thoughts, he's still very proud of what he did, saying, I had to do that. They were holding up dozens upon dozens of Obama judicial appointments. I had to do something. I said, you know, didn't you realize at some point this could boomerang? Eventually, the Republicans would. He said, of course I knew that, but you have to take your shot when you get it. And he's very proud of what he did by using the nuclear option to get those judges confirmed during the Obama era.
Mm. Layla, do you have three words?
I do. So I chose It's Groundhog Day.
We're going to allow that contraction.
And the reason I did that was I am a national correspondent now, but for the longest part of my career, I worked in the Middle East.
How many years? Because before even NPR, you were there with the Washington Post,
so
right?
So about 11 years overall.
Wow.
So
and where over?
I lived in Baghdad for about 5 years on and off. And then I lived in Egypt for about 5 years. So I moved there 2 weeks before the uprising in 2011. Which
great timing.
Yeah. And so I sort of was in that region during this whole quote-unquote global war on terror.
Mm-hmm.
And this week, there's a lot of talk about shooting from the hip with the president, his advisors resigning over his decision to suddenly pull out troops, then others pulling back on that promise. And, of course, this terrible bombing that happened in which four Americans were killed, five civilians, members of SDF in Syria. And what I was thinking, I was talking to a colleague of mine that's working mostly on Syria, and she talked about feeling like she's writing in circles. Writing in circles because we kind of tell with different details, of course, and different global powers. The United States always kind of in the center of that.
Yeah.
Tell the same story about extremism, defeating extremism, keeping people secure, without ever actually addressing the underlying issues of what drives that discontent that allows this to flourish.
Yeah.
And so often that is lack of opportunity. Mm-hmm. And so often what I've seen is it really flourishes under extreme repression or security vacuums in which people are looking for somebody to say, I will keep you safe here.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Al-Qaeda thrived on. That's what ISIS thrives on. That's what extremism we see all around the world really thrives on.
Well, and then it's like, you know, when I think of this conversation going on right now, kind of speaking to the nuance and complexity of this region, that is usually overshadowed by the craven politics of D.C. around this stuff. I'm thinking this week about the back and forth over whether or not Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi gets to go to the region because of the shutdown.
Right.
And, you know, we're having that conversation instead of getting to some of these much bigger things that you raise.
Which I think that there's so much conversation that happens about what's happening in D.C. and a lot less about the impact of what D.C. is doing to the country and to the world. And so one of the things that I've been focusing on in the past couple of weeks is talking to the people across this country who are actually impacted by the shutdown and are not thinking about whether Nancy Pelosi is going to go to Afghanistan or if the State of the Union speech is going to happen. And they're just thinking about, how do I feed my – like, I literally spoke to a federal correctional officer in the Federal Bureau of Prisons. She is skipping meals
oh my goodness
in order to feed her kids.
Ugh.
And she doesn't care about any of that stuff. She's just like, where's my paycheck and why are you guys being selfish?
Yeah.
Y'all, I have three words. They are no way out. And I'm talking about Brexit. I have been obsessed with this story for months now.
Yeah.
In part because it's such a big deal. It is the equivalent of like Texas or California seceding the Union. Like, it's big. Secondarily, I'm into this story because I love that the British Parliament yells.
Oh, my God. They're so entertaining.
They're so entertaining. Mm. And so this week, per most weeks, was a week full of Brexit drama. UK Prime Minister Theresa May took her plan to execute the Brexit to the Parliament. They voted it down. Then they had a no-confidence vote for her actual leadership, and she survived that. Right. So now she's in this weird position where no one likes her Brexit plan, but she's still there. And the thinking is whatever her plan B is, they're not going to like that either.
Yeah, I was in – so I actually was in London to the for the run-up. So I wasn't there during Brexit, obviously, but I worked there for a few months in our bureau in the year before. And people are worried about lack of opportunity. And so they didn't want all these people coming in from Eastern Europe to take their jobs. And it became this Britain First campaign.
Yeah.
You know?
Similar to America First.
So it was this whole thing where it's like, you know, let's close our borders. Let's close the ranks. We need to keep the jobs here. We need to keep the opportunities here. We don't want to keep bailing out Greece and like dealing with the rest of Europe.
Yeah. I do think it is really incredible for me to look at something like Brexit going on right now and our current politics and just to connect the dots and kind of understand more and more that all of this stuff right now, all of this stuff, it's about immigration.
Yeah.
It's about immigration.
And mass migration that's happening as people search for safety and economic opportunity.
Yeah. I will say, you know, I take a craven solace in knowing that as crazy as our politics is right now with this whole shutdown situation, it's also crazy for our best friends, the UK. Like, they are dealing with some gridlock, too.
I thought it was really funny in that there was this brief period where so much surprising stuff was happening. So Brexit happened. And it was the first time in this sort of expatriate world where Americans and Brits were, like, in these different countries together, where British people felt less willing to make fun of the US because of what had just happened in the UK. And then the election happened here, and it was like, oh, everybody is having these crazy.
Everybody is. I guess the question now is like, is the U.S. government closer to ending the shutdown than the U.K. is to actually getting a Brexit plan?
The answer is probably yes to that. I wouldn't bet a lot of money on it.
Anywho. Before we go to a break, I have to issue a little correction right now for an error that we made last week in the show. Listeners, as you know and can recall, we played 5 different versions of the Baby Shark song in our show last week to celebrate that song, cracking the Billboard Top 40. We described one of those versions, this one that I'm going to play right now really quickly. Baby Shark, Baby Shark. Really, really fun one. We described this song as mariachi. We were wrong, and we're sorry. This song is played by a banda group, and it is a cumbia version of Baby Shark. I regret that error from last week, but I'm so excited that this correction gives me another chance to play this song. All right. You're listening to It's Been a Minute from NPR, the show where we catch up on the week that was. We'll be right back.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Sierra Nevada Brewing Company. In 1980, with a few thousand dollars and used dairy equipment, Ken Grossman founded Sierra Nevada Brewing Company. Ken's award-winning ales propelled him from home brewer to craft brewer. Today, Ken and his family still own 100% of the company, one of the most successful independent craft breweries in America. More at sierranevada.com. Support for NPR and the following message come from FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming only on Hulu.
This message comes from the BBC with Where to Be a Woman. Join hosts Saatchi Kaul and Sophia Smith-Gaylor to find out where in the world women can live their best lives. Search for Where to Be a Woman from BBC Podcasts.
Human behavior doesn't always make a ton of sense, at least on the surface.
I said, would you mind if I give the dogs a little piece of cracker with some hot sauce on it and without, and see what they choose?
Hidden Brain, a spicy podcast about science, psychology, and why people do what they do.
We are back. You're listening to It's Been a Minute from NPR, the show where we catch up on the week that was. I'm Sam Sanders, here today with two guests, John Ralston, editor of the Nevada Independent, covering all the ins and outs of this state's politics. I've been trying so hard all week to not say Nevada.
You've done a beautiful job, so I have to correct you on air.
Thank you. Not yet. Also here with Layla Fadel, national correspondent for NPR, based in Las Vegas, covering culture, diversity, and race. Thank you both for being here for my Vegas week.
This is so fun.
It's a pleasure.
I love being here.
Layla, John, I want to take some time to talk about a story that has left the headlines in the last few weeks, but is still affecting thousands of people on this side of the country. All those wildfires that California and the West experienced for, gosh, it felt like it dragged on for months.
Yeah.
So much damage, record-breaking fires. I know you all have been following that. Layla, you covered some of that.
I did,
You were out there. Where were you?
Oh, well, in Paradise. So I went out to Chico, which is the neighboring town, which is overwhelmed still by people who are, because there's no houses really left in Paradise, or there are a few. And outside of war, I had never seen destruction like that. I mean, it was just a city that was gone.
Yeah, yeah.
For all intents, for like a few places survived.
So we're actually going to use our long-distance segment today to talk to a listener who lived in Paradise.
Yes. Hi, Sam.
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you doing?
I'm pretty good. I am. Leah Raley and her husband, they barely survived the deadly campfire that wiped out their town of Paradise, California, November 8th last year. I called up Leah to talk about what they're dealing with now. But first, I wanted her to walk me through that day.
Well, November the 8th happened to be my wedding anniversary, my 10th anniversary. So when I got up in the morning, I had a text message from my husband that he had sent after midnight and, you know, just happy anniversary kind of thing. And he was still asleep as I got ready for work. So went about my usual routine and left for work. And as I left, I thought, the sky looks weird.
It was a yellowy-orange color, but Leah and her husband, they hadn't heard about any fire. She thought it was far away. So she went to work in Chico, which is about 20 minutes down the mountain from Paradise. And once Leah got to Chico, she heard from colleagues about a fire back up the mountain, where her husband was still sleeping with no vehicle and four dogs.
Four dogs, three boxers, and a lab pit bull mix.
Oh, what are their names?
They're Rascal, Chopper, Daisy, and Buddy.
Oh.
Yeah, they were super important to us. So I tried to head back up there. There are really three main ways to get up to Paradise, and every one of them were blocked off. And people were on the side of the road making calls, and I couldn't get a hold of my husband for about 45 minutes. It was going straight to voicemail, and I was freaking out.
Yeah.
Finally, just after 1 o'clock, he called, and he said, I'm out. And he started crying, and he said, I couldn't get the dogs. And I said, well, maybe they'll be okay. Maybe the fire's not on our street. And he said, Leah, our street was already on fire. And he had grabbed the flashlight and went running up the street with the flashlight and found one guy on the street who was getting out at the last minute with a car full of stuff. And my husband said, can you help me get my dogs? And he said, there's no room in my car, and we got to get out of here because this place is on fire, you know. So he had to make the choice to leave. It was fight or flight, and he finally realized he had to flee.
Leah's house was completely destroyed. That was 3 months ago. Since then, she and her husband have been living with Leah's mother. It's an hour and a half commute each way for Leah to get to work. Also, they're still dealing with their insurance company. They're having to look for a new house, but they're not looking in Paradise. In fact, Leah and her husband, they actually haven't been back to paradise at all, not even once since the fire. They don't want to go back.
We both just feel like our mental health is pretty fragile right now. And
yeah.
I just don't think that I can handle some of those images. Even when I see stuff on Facebook, which I've been trying to stay off of, it really just, you know, my heart rate will go up and I just feel the anxiety and just the overwhelming sadness, not just for what we've lost, but everybody. So we're not rebuilding up there, and housing is really hard to find in the area, very expensive. There are bidding wars.
This is because people that were displaced are now just living in the surrounding area.
Right.
How much
right.
have prices gone up?
Well, as an example, just this morning talking to my real estate agent, she said that expect to spend $20,000 to $75,000 over asking price. And asking prices are significantly higher than they were, you know, say 3 to 6 months ago.
Yeah.
So
it's just salt in the wound.
It really is. It really is. It's yeah. kind of heartbreaking. And yeah. I love my job. I would love to stay there. But some days I think I want to run away, but I don't know where to.
Mm.
But I'll tell you, as we're looking at houses and thinking about where to live, I'm thinking of things that I didn't think of before. Well, is this a flood area? Is it a fire area? Is this, could my home be destroyed in a blink of an eye again? And I'm not saying that I never thought of that before, but it's at a different level now.
Yeah. Well, and what I found so interesting about what you told us before this chat is that even if you found some way to get back to paradise, a lot of the things that you need for the life you had wouldn't be there. You were telling us that your doctor is gone and he's not coming back. Your husband's doctor is gone. He's not coming back. If you went back, the town might not be there.
Right. You know, there are still things standing. My coworker whose home remains standing is going to go back. And she said, she's told me some of the businesses that are still there, but most of them are gone. You know, the Safeway is gone. And yeah, all of the things that we need day to day, our doctors and my eye doctor and my husband's dentist and all of those things that you need to do don't exist anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, talking with you now, you sound so strong and so poised. I'm guessing it's not really like that on the inside. To the best you can explain to me and to our listeners who are not going through what you're going through, what is the trauma just like for you on a daily basis?
You know, this morning even, I really started to kind of lose it a little bit, and I was crying. I called one of my friends from work and cried, and I said, you know, I don't know what I'm doing, and there are days like that I just need to cry. But I'm also a person who doesn't let myself lose it, you know. And a week ago I said to my boss, I'm not allowed to lose it. And he said, well, who said that? And I said, well, I did. Those are my rules. I need to keep it together. I've got a job. I have things to do. I have to try to get a life back.
Is that a good rule?
Probably not. It's probably not good for my mental health. But I don't know what else to do. I need to try to keep moving ahead and try to put some kind of life back together.
Yeah. What are you doing now to unwind when you have time to?
Yeah, not a lot. You know, when you're commuting 3 hours a day and then you're working, you know, plus 8 hours a day, that's a really long day. And I get home and sometimes I just pass out on the couch. I don't even make it to the bedroom, you know, to get in bed. But, you know, we do have a new granddaughter that was born just on Tuesday, so...
Ah, congratulations!
Yeah, thank you.
What's her name?
So we're going to go see her. Her name is Camila.
Oh.
And they're in the Bay Area, so we're going to go and just love on the baby and rejoice in new life in all of this.
Well, I hope that is... so enjoyable. And I just thank you for sharing your story with me and our listeners. And thank you for your perseverance in the midst of what I'm sure has been a most trying time. You will be in my prayers, and I'm sure a lot of folks out there.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate that.
Thank you, Leah.
Thank you. Bye, Sam.
Bye-bye. It's crazy to think that there are thousands of stories like that.
I mean, that conversation with her real estate agent, that was just...
It's, oh my goodness, I can't. And so, like, to have that laundry list of, like, woes, on top of that, the government shutdown is affecting recovery there and affecting survivors there. Some federal disaster grants have been delayed because of the shutdown, and actual wildfire prep work to... help mitigate the next fire season, that's kind of on hold because of the shutdown.
Yeah.
You know what struck me in listening to that, Sam, and I think it struck you too, is that this kind of optimism shining through despite all of this has happened, as difficult as it's been.
Yeah. Well, Leah, thank you again for sharing your story with us. We're going to go to a break. When we come back, we'll lighten the mood with my favorite game, Who Said That? You're listening to It's Been a Minute from NPR. We'll be right back.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, Discover. Here's a familiar situation. You have a question about your credit card. You call the number for help and can't get a hold of anyone. If only you had a Discover card. With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. A real person. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. This message comes from NPR sponsor Hulu. Dive into the chilling new Hulu original series, Under the Bridge, the riveting adaptation of the acclaimed true crime book. Based on shocking true events, Under the Bridge tells the haunting story of a murder that lays bare a small community's darkest secrets. Go deep into the hidden world of the town's tormented teenagers as detectives race to solve the sinister crime. Starring Riley Keough and Lily Gladstone, Under the Bridge is now streaming with new episodes Wednesdays, only on Hulu.
We take most things for granted, like our morning coffee. But there are a lot of people behind that cup of coffee. And A.J. Jacobs set out to thank all of them.
It doesn't just take a village to make a cup of coffee, it takes the world.
Ideas around appreciation on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
You're listening to It's Been a Minute from NPR, the show where we catch up on the week that was. I'm Sam Sanders here today with two guests, Leila Fadel, national correspondent for NPR, based in Las Vegas covering culture, diversity, and race. Also here with John Ralston, editor of the Nevada Independent. Tell folks whose politics is crazier, Chicago or Nevada?
Well, you know, I have this argument with people all the time. I still think having followed politics here for 3.5 decades, I think we have the best stories, the craziest stories. But folks in Chicago, and even more so people in Florida, say they have the craziest politics of all, want to argue with me.
I love it. All right, it's time for my favorite game, Who Said That?
Ooh, Who said that?
Nervous.
You're going to be fine. This game is so simple. I share a quote from the week. You all have to guess who said that or get the story that I'm talking about or get a keyword. But as you both know at this point, the winner gets absolutely nothing.
What? I'm not playing.
I'm used to that running a nonprofit, so that's good.
All right. This week we have some good ones. Ready for the first quote?
Yeah.
Here it is. Quote, I don't get this 10-year challenge. Time is not something I acknowledge.
Mariah.
Yes.
Mariah Carey.
Yes,
Mariah. I also have stopped acknowledging time now.
So I'm sure you both have been following this whole 10-year challenge on Facebook and Twitter and all the spaces, right?
Yeah.
People have been, for whatever reason, sharing photos of themselves now compared to photos of themselves from 10 years ago.
Right.
Mariah Carey, in her splendid glory, said, I'm not doing that. She posted a tweet with just two of the same picture of her right next to each other. And she basically said, I'm not doing this 10-year challenge. I don't believe in time. I look pretty. Look at me.
Yeah.
Listen, I'd actually do okay if I did pictures of myself 10 years ago and now. I think I'm doing better now than I was 10 years ago. But this is the kind of stuff I just missed that I need to get more. I'm living in my silo of politics and the Nevada Independent, and nothing can penetrate that.
This is fun. This is like, you know, this is where you go when you're like, oh, today was tough. And then you say, oh, Mariah Carey doesn't acknowledge time.
Exactly.
You know what? You know what I do for fun after I go to sleep.
But now, since this 10-year challenge blew up, there are some people saying, wait, what if this is a secret, sinister plot for Facebook and all these other companies to get your facial ID data?
I think they already have it.
Yeah.
Why would you been on Facebook 10 years? They've got it.
Why would anyone be suspicious of Facebook?
All right, Layla, you're up 1-0.
Oh, nice.
She's going to win this game easily. Hey. I'm already conceding defeat in advance.
Well, if there's more like that, maybe.
Yeah. All right. Next quote. Here it is. So it's not so much what I personally think about books. The question you should be asking is, what do you think about books?
Is it that tidying lady?
Yes, it is. Yes. Marie Kondo.
I didn't watch it. I just saw all the memes.
Yeah. So the backstory is really interesting, but per usual with all things internet, it ends up in a fight. Marie Kondo is an author who rose to fame with her book, The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up. I'm sure you guys have heard of it by now. Basically, her whole thing is like, you should declutter your house. And to do so, you should touch everything in your house and say to yourself, does this bring me joy? And if it doesn't, you should get rid of it. So she had the book. It was a hit. Now she has a Netflix show based on the book. And one of the things that people have been talking about in the rise of her show is that her theory about books is that maybe not all the books you have bring you joy. And she says that she herself only keeps about 30 books in her house. Mm. After this came out, a lot of folks are saying, is Marie Kondo telling me to get rid of all of my books? There was a fight all week about whether or not you can have books in your house, to which I say, I don't care. It's your house, right?
Well, I've been meaning to click on it on Netflix. But I just assumed she said throw away all your books because the fight was so...
It was so intense, right?
It was so intense. It was
John,
like
did
she
you
hates
see any
books.
Of this?
I did not. Again, I'm totally clueless here and happily admitting it. But I can relate to the whole decluttering thing, having just moved. There is so much clutter in my house. But I can't imagine anybody throwing out books.
Did you keep all your books in your move?
They're still at my son's place now.
Hopefully your son is not watching the decluttering episode.
You know,
where
it's
he
very
throw
possible.
Away books.
It's very. In fact, I better get over to that house right away.
Yeah. I will say my thing now is like if I find a book that I love and I read it as soon as I'm done with it, I want to give it away so someone else can experience it. Like
that's
the day that
nice.
I finish
that's
reading
a nice
it,
thought,
it
actually. Yeah, very
yeah.
much.
Yeah, that's a nice.
Layla, you're up 2-0. There's only 3 questions in the game. I'm not going to say you won already. We're going to make the last one worth 3 points.
Okay.
So, John, you could come back.
I have no chance in this, and I admitted it up front.
Maybe.
You might know this one.
You think?
Yeah.
Look, he's looking at me with pity in his eyes. For those of you, again, not having the pleasure of seeing his look now.
Here we go. Last quote. Due to a large order placed yesterday, we're all out of hamburgers, spelled H-A-M-B-E-R-D-E-R-S, just serving hamburgers
so this
today.
So this is the pivot off of Trump's Twitter miscue. So
yeah.
This is like Burger King or McDonald's.
Yes, sir, it is. It's Burger King.
What do you know?
It was Burger King.
It was Burger King. Oh, wait, did you just win, John? You both of you won.
Excuse me.
No, I lost.
This is rigged.
The Electoral College says.
Yes, no. Right.
Layla, you did win.
Thanks.
But you both are winners in my heart.
I feel it.
That's right. So this quote came from the Burger King Twitter account, and it was a reference to the president misspelling the word hamburgers in a tweet that he sent about serving
a college football team hamburgers at the White House this week. As we have all seen the images by this point, we know that Donald Trump welcomed the winners of this year's college football playoff national championship, the Clemson Tigers, to the White House, as is customary, for a celebratory dinner. He got them Wendy's, McDonald's, Burger King, and Domino's Pizza. But in a tweet about that, he spelled hamburgers, hamburgers, H-A-M-B-E-R-D-E-R-S. Burger King made fun of that.
He makes a lot of spelling errors. This is one of his more egregious ones. But even more amazing than that, and I'm sure you guys saw this, was the picture that they put out.
It was epic.
Of Trump looking over this with the candelabras lit up.
My favorite image, not favorite, I guess the saddest image, was like this little box of Domino's pizza that probably cost $10 a box with these elaborate, elegant silver tongs.
Oh, I missed it.
Like White House silver expensive tongs. The tongs probably cost more than the pizza.
Exactly.
All right. Layla, you did win. I was just joking. You are the champion.
Thank you. I feel so happy. I don't win anything.
Is there a trophy presentation of any kind?
We're on a budget.
Okay.
We're on public radio.
Speaking of nonprofit.
Right. Yeah. All right. That concludes Who Said That? Congratulations, Layla.
Thank you.
Listeners, before we close this segment, I do want to ask for your help for a new segment I want to try on the show very soon. We're going to call this segment, I Have So Many Questions. And listeners, I want to hear from you with questions you have about the culture. I want to let you chime in with whatever is making you ask questions, things you can't wrap your head around, things that make no sense. You know what I'm talking about. Things like the rise of clunky, ugly tennis shoes, the rapper Post Malone, the social media site TikTok, the show Riverdale. Things that make you feeling weird or confused or scratch your head or make you feel old, let us know. Send me those questions. Send me an email or even a voice memo of you actually asking me these questions. Send that to samsanders@npr.org. samsanders@npr.org. All right, now it's time to end the show as we do every week. We ask our listeners to share with us the best things that happened to them all week. We encourage folks to brag. Brent, hit the tape.
Hey, Sam. It's Tanya.
And Ryan.
From Henderson, Nevada. And the best part of our week was taking second place at the NPR Trivia Night hosted by you.
Go Team Drunk Parents.
Hey, Sam. This is Vienna. I got engaged this past weekend with my boyfriend of 5 years. Super excited to share this with you.
Hi, Sam. This is Kelly from Portland, Oregon. I just went snowshoeing in the Mount Hood National Forest with my golden retriever, Elway, and my husband, Jamie, who after 16 years of marriage, is still willing to give up a day of NFL playoffs to go on an adventure with me.
Hey, Sam, this is Katie from San Diego. I just got off the plane from Shanghai, China, and I am currently in Seoul, South Korea. I am half Chinese and half Korean, but I have never seen either of these countries before.
Hey, Sam, this is Kevin from Vegas. The best thing to happen to me this week is I seen my daughter. I'm in Vegas. These hotels are expensive, but I got a place for us because I don't have an apartment yet. So I was there with her like maybe 1.5, 2 days, and then the rest of the time she's been at my ex-wife's new apartment. And today I got to see her and touch her and hold her. So the best thing that happened to me is I got to see my daughter.
Hi, Sam. So the best part of my week kind of spans 2 weeks. Last week I spent a couple days in the hospital, which was clearly not good, but the good part is I was able to get a diagnosis fairly quickly and figure out, hey, why I've felt so terrible over the past year. I've got a treatment plan going, I've got a really good doctor. It's been really wonderful to know that all my family is just at my back when I need it, and I really needed that. Okay, thanks, bye.
I love it. Thanks to all the voices you heard there, Tanya and Ryan, Vienna, Kelly, Katie, Kevin, and Sarah. As one of those listeners mentioned, I was here this week to host Nevada Public Radio's first ever trivia night. It was so much fun.
It looked fun.
It was really, really
Based
fun.
On my performance against Layla here, I'm glad I didn't show up.
I had a great time. thanks for all of those listeners and everyone else who sent in their best things all week. We listen to all of them that come in. Keep them coming. Also, send dog photos. You can reach us anytime on the show at samsanders@npr.org. samsanders@npr.org. All right, we're going to go out on a little song called Hooked on a Feeling by Blue Swede. It is a track on the best-selling cassette of 2018, the Guardians of the Galaxy soundtrack. Yes, as we said earlier in the show, people still buy cassettes. I want both of my guests to leave this taping and go out and buy their own cassette players. Layla Fadel, national correspondent for NPR, thank you for being here today.
Thanks for having me. This was fun.
Yeah, it was really fun. John Ralston, editor of the Nevada Independent, thank you for being here.
Thanks, Sam.
This week, the show was produced by Brent Bachman, Anjali Sastry, and help from Alex McCall. Special engineering help this week from Casey Morell. Right now of Nevada Public Radio, but soon to be heading to D.C. to work for NPR. Excited to have you out there, Casey, and thanks for all your help this week. And a special thanks to Nevada Public Radio for hosting me and the show all week. Really appreciate it. Steve Nelson is our director of programming. Our editor is Jordana Hochman. Our big boss is NPR's senior VP of programming, Anya Grundman. Listeners, refresh your feed Tuesday morning for my chat with the director and one of the stars of Rent Live. Yes, Rent is coming to your TV screens later on this month. We'll talk about what it takes to bring such an iconic stage show to the screen and why it seems TV musicals used to always get a bad rap, but that might be changing. Check for Tuesday. All right, till next time, thanks for listening. I'm Sam Sanders. Talk soon.
All the good love ooga, chaka, ooga, when we're all alone. Ooga, chaka, ooga, ooga, keep it up, girl. Ooga, chaka, ooga, yeah, you turn ooga, me chaka, on. Ooga, ooga.
How many songs is the Ooga Chaka in? Because I feel like it's in a bunch of songs.
It is?
It's in a Billy Joel song of some sort, right?
I don't know.
You got me on that one. Okay. I should know Billy Joel, too, and I don't know that.
Is this part of the quiz?
No, I'm just kidding. Quiz is over. You won. Yeah.
And I'm high on the
This message comes from NPR sponsor Viore, a new perspective on performance apparel. Clothing designed with premium fabrics, built to move in, styled for life. For 20% off your first purchase, go to viore.com/NPR. This message comes from NPR sponsor Rosetta Stone, an expert in language learning for 30 years. Right now, NPR listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership to 25 different languages for 50% off. Learn more at rosettastone.com/NPR.
Imagine a house where every room follows a different architect's plan. Doorways don't connect. Staircases lead nowhere. Lost Patients is a new podcast examining our complicated system for treating psychosis, one that loses patients to an endless loop between the streets, jail, and hospitals. We'll ask how it got so bad and how it can get better. Listen to Lost Patients from KUOW and the Seattle Times, part of the NPR network.